You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, the official podcast of JetNation.com,
the largest independent fan site in the NFL.
Be sure to check out our forums and talk all things Jets with thousands of other diehard Jets fans. Now, to get you up to date on all the latest Jets news, notes, and quotes, here are your hosts, Glenn Naughton and Alex Barallo.
Good evening, Jets fans. I am Glenn Naughton. This is Jet Nation Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciated as always. And I am joined by my co-host, Alex. For Alex, I feel like the last 2 months we may have done two shows together. It's either I'm out or I'm sick or I've got something and you've got work or you're sick. I can't remember the last time we did a show. And when we last did a show together, I think it had been a couple weeks prior to that we did a show. So it's great to have. I feel like we have a guest tonight. And his name is Alex Barallo. Alex, how you doing?
Likewise, man. It's been a roller coaster throughout this entire stretch, and I don't even know what day it is anymore. It's just kind of, you know, working remotely, working at home, and trying to dodge the pandemic, and then all the new current stuff going on with today's day and age. It's just one crazy roller coaster ride that hopefully ends soon with some more positiveness and some better things. And I believe somebody said the other day we were under 100 days till the football season starts. So that's a good countdown in my mind for better days to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Things are just absolutely nuts at the moment. Even being over here in England, watching from a distance, I'm just flabbergasted. And as I said, you know, during the whole COVID thing, when that was at its peak, that, you know, this is kind of an opportunity for people to get away from reality for a little bit, because it's you could talk about disturbing, distressing, controversial, stressful issues, all that stuff. But I mean, Jesus, do people really need another place for that? I've been looking at it all day on Twitter, on Facebook. I'm getting emails from friends. I'm getting text messages from friends in the States. We're messaging back and forth. And it's unbelievable. I mean, things are so bad right now that, and I'm not even saying this to be funny, even though I did laugh when I realized what I was doing. And this is the last I'll say on it, because I don't want to go, you know, drag the show down. And like I said, people can get enough of this elsewhere. But I realized today, I laughed when I realized I was looking up information on COVID to cheer myself up. Like, that was like, I needed to cheer up. So I looked up COVID data. Like 2 weeks ago, COVID was bringing the end of the world, and today it was a pick me up because of what we're seeing in the States and what we're seeing innocent people go through. Unbelievable. So that's enough of that terrible, tragic situation. And hopefully we, you know, come out the other end better off for what's going on right now, because it really is just unfathomable. But anyway, so tonight's show, one thing I held off a little bit last week, Alex. As we said, you weren't able to make it, and glad you're feeling better, by the way. Didn't really touch on the Joe Flacco stuff because I wanted to get your thoughts. So we'll cover that tonight. I wanted to look at the 53 as a whole. You know, last week I kind of covered that Joe Douglas do enough for the offense mainly, but really looking at the 53-man roster compared to last year's, how much better is it? And one thing, focusing a little bit on the defense this week, because when I tweeted this out yesterday, I'm trying, believe me, I'm trying to keep my expectations tempered. I've said I think this is probably a 5 or 6 win team. You know, of course anything's possible, but if I had to guess right now, I'd say this team wins 6 games. But when I look at the defense, and I think to myself, because listen, every team, it doesn't matter if you're the Cincinnati Bengals or if you're the Kansas City Chiefs. Every team has things going into a season where, in their hopes to be successful, they're going to have a list of ifs. Well, if this happens, and if that happens, and if this, and if that, we'll have a successful season. Whether successful means 500, whether successful means winning record, whether successful means playoffs, whether successful means Super Bowl, that's up to each individual. But every team has their ifs. And it seems to me, at least for the Jets, and especially on defense, there aren't a great deal of ifs to me, in my mind. There are three key ones, three key ifs that if they come to fruition, and that being if C.J. Mosley is healthy, if Avery Williamson is healthy, and if Pierre Desir returns to form of a couple of years ago, just 2 years ago. You know, sometimes we say, well, hopefully this guy plays as well as he did, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago, which just isn't as realistic. But 2 years ago, Pierre Desir was a very good corner. So if Desir returns to 2018 form, and if the two inside linebackers are healthy, how good can this defense be? And let's start with that topic, Alex. Let's go through this. But let's say the two linebackers and Pierre Desir are healthy. Is there any reason to believe that this defense won't be top five caliber? They were top seven last year without Mosley, without Williamson, with you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh string linebackers, and without a guy like Desir. Now, granted, the schedule helped out because they played some really bad quarterbacks. They didn't go on a lot of long road trips. But, Alex, is this defense good enough to basically – well, the fourth if is the biggest one, but it's on the other side of the ball, which is why I didn't mention it. But if Adam Gase's offense improves. So let's say hypothetically Williamson, Mosley, healthy, Desir plays at a high level. Can Adam Gase's offense average enough points to win 9 or 10 games? Because if the defense plays up to par with those guys being healthy, you're talking about a top 5-10 unit. Keeping you that you shouldn't see 3 or 4 or 5, however many double-digit blowout losses they had last year. The defense should be good enough to prevent that. So, I mean, what do you think, Alex? Is this defense good enough? And what are some of your ifs? You know, people tell me, oh, we don't have an edge rusher. I get that there's no edge rusher. But I expect a big leap from Quinnen Williams, and I think we're going to continue to see Jamal Adams used off the edge, and who knows what Zuniga brings and all that. But I don't want to go too crazy and name 50 different things that have to happen. But what are the main things that have to happen for this defense to be successful? And if those things happen, is Adam Gase's offense – I'm not asking Adam Gase to be top five, but can you give us a top 15 offense that paired with what we hope will be a top 10, top 8 defense – That's a playoff formula right there.
Yeah, just it must be the life of a Jets fan where you have to start every conversation going into before the beginning of the season with if, hope, and, you know, connecting all these dots and things like that. But I do feel that, you know, obviously a lot of the success for this team is going to be on the offensive side of the ball, and you know, the light shines on Gase there for sure. That goes without saying. And I do feel that team can replicate the way that they were performing down the stretch in November and December defensively. And with these key pieces that you've mentioned in Williamson, Desir, Mosley, we have no idea, you know, if this Zuniga kid can, you know, just be the guy that we're looking for on third down to get after the quarterback. So a lot of those little key factors will only, you know, create better plays and a stronger defensive group for us on that side of the ball. So I absolutely feel that, you know, this year maybe we don't have the Clowney or the Garrett or the Watts of the world. We don't have those kind of things, but we have something that nobody else has, or, you know, maybe only one or two other teams have. We have a Jamal Adams on our team. So with that, that gives me a lot of hope. And if C.J. Mosley can go back to that form in which he was playing week one last year, I mean, he just looked like he was going to be one of the top defensive linebackers in the league with the way he started. He had the defensive touchdown. He made the play that he got injured on. He saved the touchdown with that pass deflection. He just looked like he was the piece that Greg Williams has always wanted in his defense to kind of be the leader of his, of that core group right there inside the tackle box. So I absolutely feel that, you know, addition by subtraction with getting rid of some other players in the defensive back room, it's like, you know, we trimmed out the bad parts, we cut the fat out, You know, now we're dealing with really a good product or a better product, I feel. And as long as, you know, these guys can get themselves acclimated, you know, with the new system that Greg Williams has, and there hasn't been a lot of turnover on the defensive side of the ball, which is really, really good. I mean, if you think about it, there's a couple rookies that have come in and, you know, a couple free agents that may not be too familiar with Greg Williams' system, but you have to say almost 90% of this defense has come back. So that's definitely going to be beneficial for us because you're not going to have to implement, you know, the system over again. Guys are going to be familiar with the scheme and the playbook, and, you know, Greg Williams can probably go further into different types of styles of coverages because I think he watered down his defense a lot last year because of the talent that we had out there in fourth and fifth and sixth string starters. So having, you know, some guys come back healthy and just attempting to replicate some of the things that we did last year, I can absolutely see this being another top 10 defense this year. You know, and the big key factor will be how well do we put pressure on the quarterback, obviously. That'll be the big – everyone will always be talking about that regardless. So can someone emerge? That would definitely help. But I definitely feel that, like you said, our success will probably be more determined on the offensive side. But in the event that people stay healthy, I think that this Jets defense is going to be stingy. And I think a lot of these games that people have just written us off on, you know, to lose, I think the Jets might surprise this year, to be quite honest with you. I mean, if you look at the schedule last year, the way I wrote it up and I had – between six or seven wins, but I didn't get all the games right. I didn't have us beating Oakland. I didn't have us beating Pittsburgh. You know, I had us running the table on Miami. So, you know, anything can happen, you know, rosters change all the time. And you know, I'll throw it back to you, but yeah, I absolutely definitely believe that, you know, we can do greater things this year with some of the healthier pieces that are coming back.
Yeah, and it's all, you know, it's always so tough, especially, you know, picking games when you're talking about within the division. It's just, it's one of those things where, you know, even back when you look at the old, you know, the old Rex teams when the Jets were pretty damn good and the Dolphins were terrible, like they would get a split. You know, it seems like they always find a way to split or drop both against a division opponent. It's always just really strange. It's, you know, within the division, teams just tend to step up. It's the familiarity. You know, you might be a bad team, but maybe you're a good matchup against the team in your division. And you see them twice a year, so you know them, and you steal a win where you shouldn't. So it's always, even when the Jets, even when I feel good about them, I have a hard time picking them to win both games against a division opponent, even though I had them winning two against Miami last year. And let's face it, they lost that the game they lost to Miami when Miami was 0-7 or whatever, and they beat the Jets. Even that second win, week 14 was the one. I'm getting myself mixed up now. Yeah, they won the week 14 game. That was
the second field goal. Yeah, the second
game.
I was there in Miami for that loss, so yeah.
Yeah, and they the one they won, like, they needed some breaks. Like, they caught some breaks really late in that game. They almost lost twice to a team that was tanking. So, you know, those
we won the second game on what's his name's foot.
Ficken. That's what I'm saying.
Ficken
won that game. That's what I mean. That game, like last second, and they caught some breaks late in that game to put him in position to get that win. So they nearly lost twice to a team that was trying to lose their games. So that was brutal. But all in all, looking at the roster from top to bottom, I mean, really, how much better are they? And this is something I've said a few times, and I've heard others say it, that even with the improvements, the record may not be much better because the schedule is that much tougher. So looking at it from top to bottom, obviously Sam's back. But you bring in Flacco to back him up. So what are your thoughts on that move? I'll share my thoughts for when you're done. But I had somebody, I don't know if you saw it, Alex. Someone got really pissed off at me on Twitter. I don't even know who it was. The guy was like, I basically said, oh, this, you know, Flacco could be a good mentor for Darnold. And this guy was like, you're so full of shit. You have no idea what you're talking about. Obviously, Flacco's the worst. He has no interest in being a mentor. He wasn't a mentor for Locke. He wasn't a mentor for Jackson. I was like, wow. All right. So you go ahead, and then I'll address the Twitter lunatic and my thoughts on Flacco.
It's interesting that you say that, because those were some of the thoughts that I had too, because I remember his initial response to when they drafted Lamar Jackson. And it was more or less like, why would I help somebody to take my job or something? And it really, really went south for him. And clearly, he's no longer a Raven. And then he went to the Broncos. And then he kind of had the same thing happen over there. And, you know, now, you know, that's just kind of how quickly the NFL can turn on you. You know, one day you're the starting franchise face. And then, you know, next time you're holding, you know, the next year you're holding a clipboard, watching a kid 10 years younger than you do your job. So. It's interesting because I've watched Flacco for a lot of years. I went to Hofstra University, and one of my best friends went to Delaware, and you know that was a rivalry game in their division. So it was always fun to go down to Delaware and go check out a game there. And I never knew that the quarterback I was watching was going to be a Super Bowl champion, and then eventually end up being a quarterback on the Jets. That never occurred to me. I'd like to think that, Flacco has probably come a long way, and looking in the mirror and saying like, okay, I'm not the man I used to be. I'm not the player I used to be. And people don't see me the way that, I see myself anymore. So, but here's the kicker. And I forgot who put it out there. Somebody had put out a stat saying that the Jets haven't won a game with a backup quarterback since 2016 in Bryce Petty. So we need somebody behind Sam that can at least be a game manager and keep us honest. And that I do feel that we can get from Flacco. I'm not sure about his health. I know he just had surgery somewhere in his upper back or his neck area. So he may not be ready to go as the backup week one. But he will probably be there, I would assume, sometime in October, November, and December. So I think that he can bring a lot to the table for Sam. His experience going to the Super Bowl, going to the playoffs, doing those things. I don't know if he is the perfect model for Sam to kind of image his game off of, but, it's those little mental things that I think inside when they're breaking down film and doing things like that, that's where I think Sam will benefit the most from a player like Joe. So I think it's a good move. It's definitely an improvement from David Sales, who was originally our backup, and our rookie James Morgan. The quarterback room is not looking great behind Sam Darnold, so things are looking a little bit better in that position group, I feel, as of right now.
Yeah, I think, I look at Morgan, and I think he's a guy that he's going to end up on IR. He's going to be an IR stash. Don't want him to play. Don't expect him to play. But still give him the opportunity to learn, stick him on IR for the season, and let Flacco be your two and go from there. But we'll see. Maybe he gets a roster spot. But, yeah, listen, the Drew Brees thing, and this is my feeling, like I said, I don't remember who the guy was. I don't really care, but he was like, you saying Flacco is a good signing shows that you don't know anything about football and you're blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is a totally different situation because – Flacco, in both those other situations, he was trying to protect his starting job. And in his mind, he was the starter. And he was. He was the starter in Baltimore until he wasn't. And then he goes to Denver, where John Elway is like, I think this guy is, his best years are ahead of him. Everyone knew Elway was crazy. I mean, listen, you can praise a guy publicly, but when you're going to go that far over the top, that's just nuts. But he still went into that season feeling like he would be the starter. He was the starter, and he was trying to protect his job. And as much as we don't like it, fans may not like it, I remember, there's a lot of things that I remember thinking when I was a little kid that I feel like I grew out of, that I understood as I got older. And a lot of people, for some reason, don't seem to get that stuff. Like when I hear somebody complain that there's no player loyalty. Like, I thought that way when I was a little kid. But I've watched the game long enough to know that 99% of these players, they just want the bigger check. You know, at some point, winning may be important enough that they'll take a little bit less. Like, if they're like, oh, damn, I've been in the league 8 years. This is probably my last big contract. I'd like to get a ring. I'll take a couple million less to go to a contender. Like, that's kind of the exception. But for the most part, young guys in their prime with multiple bidders, they want that biggest paycheck. And I understand that. But I still see people that are like, oh, I can't believe that guy wasn't loyal to the team. And I don't get that. And the same thing with Flacco. You know, oh, I don't want that guy. He wouldn't help the quarterback on his last team. That's the way I thought when I was a little kid. But then you grow up and you realize, like, oh, damn, like, that is a job. That is a position. Any job. Name a job that somebody wants.
Yeah.
Whether it's a good job, bad job. If it's somebody that person wants and they worked their whole life for and they've had that job and their company brings in someone younger than them to take that job, you think that dude's going to be like, all right, man, here, let me show you all the tricks you need to know to take my job from me. And some guys might, and that's very noble, and I admire it, and that's great. But I don't begrudge a guy who doesn't. But in this situation, Joe Flacco's not the starter. He knows he's not the starter. He's not coming in to be the starter. He's not making starter money. Joe Douglas knows him from Baltimore and probably said, dude, I like you. You'd be a good mentor for Sam. We'll give you $1 million if you come in and do it. You have no other offers right now. Maybe if Sam misses a couple weeks, you play well, you get an offer in the offseason. So Flacco take Joe Flacco isn't coming in here on a 1 year deal to be a jerk and not mentor Sam Darnold for the one season that he's here. And he's not coming in thinking, I'm gonna take Sam Darnold's job, I'm gonna be the quarterback for the next 10 years of the Jets. It's not happening. He's 90 years old. He signed a 1 year deal to come in and be a mentor and hold a clipboard. And listen, maybe his agent said, look, Joe, we're going to try to get you in a place with a quarterback who has missed time over the last few years and always misses time. All right, well, Darnold's got a track record now. Now, the mono thing is flukish. It's not like it was an injury. And even the injury was flukish. True. That was on the head coach keeping the quarterback in a game where the center was snapping the ball to the upper deck. You know what I mean? So, really, it's like there's a time history of missing time, but not really what I would call an injury history. But even still, the agent looks at it, Flacco looks at it. Hey, let's find a team that might sign you where they have a quarterback who might have some durability issues. Oh, look, New York, if Darnold misses another 4 games this year, that's 4 starts for you to get some film out there. So it makes sense at every level. But this notion that Flacco won't be a good mentor because he hasn't been in the past – those were different situations. He was a starting quarterback trying to protect his job. Now he's coming in on backup money to be a backup. He's not taking the Jets' starting job. He's not trying to. He's going to try to play his best. He wants to play, of course. He'd love to get some starts. But that's not the expectation. So that's why everything's different in my mind. And anyone who's saying that he won't be a good mentor, I think it's just people being negative for the sake of being negative. But anyway, so that's quarterback. Again, as I said, Morgan, does he go to IR? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, the quarterback situation is much improved. Is it not, Alex, with bringing Joe Flacco in? I mean, have you had the chance, actually, what I wanted to ask? I went back and watched a few of Flacco's games from last year. Looked very impressive against Jacksonville. I watched 3 games, and there was one in particular. I can't remember the opponent now because it was like 10 days ago, and the world is upside down. But it was a game where the numbers – I think it was Green Bay, against Green Bay. The numbers weren't pretty. Stat line wasn't great. But he made some throws in that game where the plays were there to be made, and the receivers either didn't hold on to the ball, dropped the pass. He threw a touchdown. He threw a ball. It would have been a touchdown. The receiver had not a ton of room to get his toes down, but he had enough room and just didn't get it done. So I'm watching these plays, and I'm like, he's moving the ball. They're driving down the field. He's making big-time throws, and guys are dropping the ball. Guys aren't – so he wasn't even playing poorly, and the thing I liked was the number of times I saw the ball come out quickly, which we just didn't see from Trevor Siemian or Luke Falk last year when they were in there and, you know, when they got their chance under center. But I think we have to agree, Alex, the quarterback position is obviously better than it was last year.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you look down the line, you know, with exception for Teddy Bridgewater's short stint, you know, Flacco is probably the best backup quarterback that we've had in years. I have him ahead of, you know, Uncle Josh and Siemian and, you know, Fales and Falk. And, you know, we can even go further down the line past that. So we haven't had a quarterback like this with his experience. And, accomplishments. That's a big thing too. This guy's accomplished a lot in this league thus far. So, you know, all those things are definitely going to be beneficial, you know, for everybody in this team too. And, you know, you got to think about the guys on the second and the third string that, you know, are probably missing out on opportunities to crack, you know, reps or snaps in the starting lineup because their backup stinks. And, you know, he's not putting the ball, you know, on their back hip or, you know, over their head or, you know, they're not getting the timing down on their route. So, you know, he could be, you know, the new best friend for some of these guys that are, you know, on the back end of the 53 that are trying to get a job. So, you know, there's definitely going to be a lot that he can bring to the table in that manner.
And that brings us to running back. So, of course, Le'Veon Bell is back, so no change there. You've replaced basically, you know, we're guessing here depth chart-wise, but Frank Gore will replace Bilal Powell. Maybe LaMichael Perrin does. But those are the two big additions in the backfield, Perrin and Gore. I think for me personally, Gore is a downgrade from Bilal. He's older, he's slower, he was less productive last year. And, you know, he's 37, so I think I would prefer Powell. But, you know, people, oh, the Gore, he's number whatever on the all-time list. Great. He's number whatever. You want to bring in Emmitt Smith? You want to bring in Barry Sanders at this point? Like, because you were great for however many years doesn't mean you're better than all the guys that aren't ahead of you on that list. So if I had my choice, I would have taken Bilal Powell back, even though he didn't really have a role last year. But we're still just talking player versus player, not so much how involved in the scheme they were.
Yep.
I mean, again, you can't not as a pro, Frank Gore, absolutely fantastic. You know, all the whole role model mentor stuff. I'm not saying you can't do that stuff. I don't feel like it's a dire thing to have a running back mentor on the roster. But I would say that, in my opinion, that's a downgrade. But of course, at running back three, Perrin is probably better than most of the guys, or you know, than any of the other guys on the roster, who would be a two or a three. So I feel like Gore's a downgrade, but Perrin's an upgrade, so that's kind of a wash. And, of course, none of it's going to matter if the O-line doesn't block up front. But the running back situation, Alex, what are your thoughts? Are they better off? Are they the same? How do you feel?
Slightly improved, and I would say that mainly because of the young legs of Perrin coming into the fold here. And I am totally assuming that he's going to have a role, which is kind of maybe a little far-fetched by me compared to what we saw last year with Ty Montgomery. But, yeah, I'd have to say, you know, you're bringing in a guy. It's like this big brother program that they've created with all these older guys, you know, to mentor these young guys, it seems like. It's very interesting to see how Joe Douglas is putting this whole roster together. But, yeah, there's definitely going to be, a lot of, like, player coaching going on, per se. You know, you have, you know, Hines Ward looking over the wide receivers. You have, you know, and he, and you know, in my opinion, I think he's one of the, you know, the greats as well. And, you know, you got Gore, who's in the top five or top 10 on the running back list. And, you know, it's just like, who else are they going to bring in at this point that has all like those similar kind of accolades too? But are they significantly improved from last year? I want to say it's more or less the same. I kind of feel the same way that you do. I think that Bilal probably has a little bit more juice in the tank than Gore. Gore has shown that he is a little more durable than him, even at his age. So I guess that would be something that he has an advantage over Bilal over. And excuse me, looking at, you know, what we had in house last year, we didn't even really know what Montgomery was capable of because he wasn't even really used. If Perrin has any sort of a role, then yeah, I guess you can say that this running back room is improved, but I kind of feel like it was somewhat lateral.
Yeah, I think, like I said, love the intangible score brings for me personally. I think he's a little bit of a downgrade, but all in all, and I think Perrin, you know, at that position anyway, is a bit of an X factor. Because he does look to play a lot faster than you know the numbers tell us he is. And again, if the blocking's not there, none of it will matter. But moving on to wide receiver, it was a position where the Jets were already weak. Demaryius Thomas is a guy who they might bring back, but he's a free agent at the moment. But you let Robbie walk. You brought in Perriman, who, you know, for my money, I feel like when you watch Perriman play, there are some things he does well that Robbie Anderson doesn't do so well, but the production hasn't been there. When you look at Perriman and Robbie side by side, Robbie's been the better player, no question. However, that doesn't mean Perriman isn't a late bloomer who is now going to be as good or better than Robbie. So that's a huge question mark. And if we're being honest, you know, we can want to wear the green color glasses all we want. Just looking at production, you got to say Robbie was the better player. You got to say that was a downgrade until Perriman proves otherwise. But then by bringing in Mims, now Mims Perriman, that has the potential to be a nice tandem because they weren't great last year at receiver. I mean, let's face it, and I've said this before, Alex, anytime you have an entire unit, anytime you finish 32nd in the NFL on either side of the ball, offense or defense, you just can't grade anyone. Because, you know, even if you have some good players, no two or three or four good players are good enough to overcome seven or eight really bad ones. And the Jets had that at times last year. I'm not saying that these receivers aren't as good. We just need to see. Like Vincent Smith, he's a guy, limited reps, right? But you look at some of the things he did late in the season. He played well against Baltimore. He had a few catch and run. He had a big play against Miami where you look at him and think, oh, man, I would have loved to see this guy get more targets because it looks like there's something there. But you can't really judge a whole lot on three or four catches. But his production, if you go back and look, I was looking at his game logs a few weeks ago, and I posted a few clips that I pulled from him, and he definitely saw increased targets, increased catches, increased production down the stretch. So maybe the Jets do believe in him. And, he's a young guy who's kind of being developed after being picked up from the Texans. But I don't feel like you can say receiver-wise, in terms of what guys have proven, they're no better or not much better. But I think the potential to be much better is there. And, of course, Crowder, who had himself a really nice season last year. And now if you give him a little bit more room to work underneath with having a couple guys who run in the 4-3s, 4-4s, or 4-2s and 4-3s in Perriman and Mims, I think there could be some great opportunities for Crowder there. And as I said, Smith played really well down the stretch. So the potential to be there, the potential to be much better, but I think it's a bit, as I said, a bit biased to just assume they'll be better. That's just kind of wishful thinking because we're fans and we want the team to do better. So upgrade possible, but I think at best you have to say a wash in terms of what they've proven at this point.
Definitely agree. I mean, the way that you look at it is there's two ways I guess you could kind of see this. It's they brought in Josh Doctson and Breshad Perriman, who are former first-round picks. So at some point, these guys were evaluated on a talent perspective as going to be starting, producers at the wide receiver position. So year-to-date, the former teams and, fans of the Ravens and Washington Redskins would probably say that these guys are busts. So clearly, Joe Douglas came out here and said, look at these former first-round guys, let's see if we could get something out of them that these other teams failed to do. Clearly, Perriman coming from Baltimore a couple of years ago that, we know where the ties lie there. So, like you said, potential is pretty much all you can really look at because nothing has been proven out of Doctson and Perriman at this point. You had a couple, lightning in the bottle kind of weeks for Perriman to end the season end last year. And, will that carry over? We have no idea. Different system, different personnel out there, different schemes, different, defensive people will be going up against. We've got some really, really good corners in the AFC East that our receivers are going to be going up against. And, that could, be the factor that makes them non-existent on certain games. Tre'Davious White out of Buffalo is a really, really good corner, and I think they just brought in Josh Norman over in Buffalo too, right? You got Stephon Gilmore over in New England, and then you got a couple great corners that they just signed off of free agency in Miami. One of them, Byron Jones, and I think they already had another guy named Xavier. I want to say Xavier Rhodes, but I could be wrong. But regardless,
they've got a lot of depth up there.
Oh, I mean, we're going to be going up against some really, really strong defensive backfields this year. So the receivers could possibly struggle this year. Clearly, if Mims shows what he did in college and can translate that, that's obviously going to put more focus on him and create opportunities for other people. And that's kind of what we have to hope for. Here we are again, if and hoping. This is probably the one thing that concerns me the most out of all the position groups on our team right now. And I've spoken at length about how I feel about Mims, but I also kind of felt that he's the kind of guy that needs a solid number two in order to do the things that he can do. The teams are going to understand that, this is probably one of the best go-to guys that Darnold's going to try to get the ball to outside of Crowder and Bell and possibly Herndon. So, if those guys elevate their game and can create opportunities, then maybe, Doxson or Perriman, if one of the two of them can perform in a quality number two role, let's say, our offense will be okay. But we're just speculating at this point. And if we're looking at what history has shown us right now, things are not looking too great as far as that wide receiver room. So, Sam's going to have to elevate, and maybe his skill level and his talent in year three can everything that I've said, and he can defy all the, obstacles that are before him and become a quality quarterback with these young guys, because he does have a good young group to work with at this point. As I've said, you said, unproven.
Yeah, and I think there's, like I said, you have some really a lot to work with there in terms of speed and explosiveness, and even Braxton Berrios, a guy who didn't get a lot of opportunities last year, but in limited opportunities, he showed that he can be a guy who can make some plays with the ball in his hands. And we saw him as a punt returner, what he did there. So definitely some guys to work with. And really, the receiver position is always interesting when you're struggling there, because teams tend to bring in like a million of them to camp. The Jets will probably end up going to the camp with 17, 18, 19 receivers, and then cut that down to six, maybe seven, depending on how they use those couple extra roster spots and, things along those lines. But some guys there with high ceilings, and of course, you've got the undrafted guys, so we'll see what happens there. Moving to tight end, really, no changes, really, other than hoping Chris Herndon is healthy and that Griffin stays healthy. So no new big names, but if it's Herndon, Griffin, Wesco, Brown, basically they get much better if Herndon stays healthy. And for my money, I talked earlier about X factors on defense. I think Chris Herndon is the biggest X factor on offense. And, of course, the quarterback, of course, you need Darnold to perform, but that's sort of a no-brainer. That's a given. Goes without saying, as they say. The biggest factor to me is Herndon, because if Herndon is healthy in the middle of the field and he picks up where he left off a couple years ago when he had some really good games as a rookie, I think that it brings the offense to the next level. And I think people forget how good Chris Herndon was when he was healthy a couple years ago. But of course, given the injury history, there is some legitimate reason for concern. But what are your thoughts there at tight end? Again, we know how much you love your boy Wesco. And I'm not sure if you went back. I posted some clips, Alex. And I don't know if you've gone back and watched the All-22. But go back and watch him against Baltimore. He was really good in that game. He did a nice job as a blocker.
He was burying people that game. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we saw some strides from him.
Injuries, pushed him into the lineup. It's not like he was improving or showing anything in practice. There's just bodies kept dropping. And, I my gut feeling is that he's not a Gase guy. That's kind of what I've got from it, because you know, we talked about him at length, and everybody talked about, you know, his ability to play fullback, his ability to be an H-back and inline tight end and sometimes extend outside and things like that. And didn't see much of any of that. And we needed extra blockers out there for pass protection. We needed help in the running game. And they were taking Jonathan Harrison as a fullback in certain scenarios in the beginning of last year until, you know, things fell off with Khalil. And then Harrison had to become a starter. But, yeah, just it's very bizarre, you know, because I think I saw something that nearly 66% of the formations that we did last year was a three wide receiver set and one tight end. So we really weren't working on a power scheme at all. And I think if you look at kind of the dynamic of the team that we had, we weren't really prepared or we didn't have the skill set to run a zone style run game. And, you know, Le'Veon Bell has always done best when he has a blocker, you know, in front of him that he can kind of put his hand on and push and then do his little delay, pause and run and burst and things like that. And I kind of would like to see him have a more of a significant role. I kind of feel like that was all but nixed when they brought back Daniel Brown. And then when they gave the extension to Griffin too, I was pretty shocked by that because, you know, we paid this guy and then he gets hurt within a week or two later, which is just, you know, our sheer bad luck last year. So, you know, you have Griffin coming back, assuming healthy. We have Herndon coming back, assuming healthy. Daniel Brown, special teamer, doesn't impress me. Don't
yeah,
really want to
see
that guy in any sort of significant role offensively next year. And then Wesco's is kind of, I don't know if he's the man in the middle or the man on the outside. But I would like to see, you know, more opportunities for him. You know, like you said, in that Baltimore game, getting out in space, you know, decleating linebackers and you know, putting cornerbacks and safeties in duress. So that's where I would like to see. I think on a receiving aspect, Griffin and Herndon could be a really nice pairing for Darnold. But as far as the run game concerned, it's not going to be as strong if Herndon's not in the mix and he's not healthy. A healthy Herndon should not only give us a boost on the receiving aspect, but he definitely, I think, is probably a better blocker than he is a receiver. And I do think his receiving skills are above average, especially, you know, from those things we saw late in his rookie year. So Herndon's a huge factor out of this tight end group. And, you know, he's another one of those big, big factors. I feel that if he can play all 16 and replicate the things he did his rookie year, this offense is going to be much better than I anticipate.
Wholeheartedly agree. Herndon can be such a big factor up front, and you know, in, as you mentioned, in the blocking game, he's a multi-dimensional guy. And speaking of blocking, the O-line. I mean, we've gone over it a million times over. We don't have to talk about it a ton, but where do you see guys line? If you had a guess today, what's the starting five look like, and how much better are they than last year's group?
Yeah. That is most certainly the key because nothing has changed as far as the left guard position is concerned with Alex Lewis. We know what to expect from him. I definitely feel there's been an improvement in the center position with McGovern. Becton, I just feel as an age factor, body size, talent, potential, all those things, I think he has a very, very high ceiling to be a really, really good left tackle for this team. You know, as long as he can maintain his weight and stay on the field, yes, I do feel that we will have better play on the left side as far as the left tackle is concerned. So I see Becton winning the left tackle job. You can see Lewis being our left guard, McGovern in the center, and then it's the right guard and the right tackle position that kind of get a little iffy here. I feel that George Fant will win the job at right tackle, and the biggest question mark is right guard. Brian Winters is still on the team, something that we were all expecting not to have him at this point, but he's still here. So if Winters is going to be the guy, that's not an improvement. It's more or less just the same. And when he's not healthy, we know that he's detrimental to this line. We love his heart. We love his character. We appreciate him as, you know, his everything he's done for the Jets. But the last few years, you know, he's been very unlucky as far as staying healthy. So he can be a negative to Sam and to this whole line as a whole. So if Greg Van Roten is the guy, I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I really don't know if Greg Van Roten has what it takes to produce at a higher level than what Brian Winters can do, just because I'm just not as familiar with him. Just, you know, I haven't seen enough tape on him to put a stamp on it. But Roten does win this job, and he can show that he can play better than a healthy Winters, then the answer is yes, this O-line has been improved. But, again, this is another if and hoping factor. You know, can these guys all gel together? This virtual stuff and these guys not being able to work out together and, you know, chew into their playbook and sit with their coaches and watch the film and talk throughout the plays and the scheme and everything like that, that concerns me because this offense, you know, is going to be determined in the trenches on how well they're going to do. You know, we talked about the receivers. We talked about the running back room. And, you know, those guys are not going to be able to get the ball if our offensive line is not able to protect Sam and give him time. And that's just the bottom line. And the same thing goes with the running game. So, big question marks there. I do feel that we've made about two or three, you know, substantial improvements on this offensive line, but the guard position, left and right, kind of, I'm not sure if we've really improved in those areas there. So, you know, maybe Cameron Clark, he seems, you know, from what I've seen from his college tape, I really, really like what he brings to the table. He's tenacious. He plays through the whistle. You know, he's another one of those guys just burying bodies. And, you know, I always happen to notice after he puts somebody down on the ground, he kind of stands up over him, like, with a dominating stance, just kind of like, you know, making his presence being known. And, you know, people weren't messing with him because he's a big man. And Cameron Clark ends up, you know, having the athleticism to win a starting job and be a guard for us here. And he can get out in space and do great things. Then, yeah, this O-line is going to be a lot of fun to watch. But, again, you know, we have to hope and see if these players can reach their potential.
Yeah, that's my sort of best-case scenario to me, is that Clark wins that right guard job. I've said it a few times already, pumped him up quite a bit before the draft, listed him as a top sleeper heading into day two, was thrilled when the Jets took him. And I would love to see him win that job. Van Roten, it's funny with Van Roten, if you remember when we did our offensive free agency preview, like what position should we address, I mentioned him briefly as a guy the Jets might want to go after watching him a little bit. And now I want to double back and see, you know, having not looked at him in a few months, what I think of him. Because I don't, my thoughts on him aren't really clear. And I remember thinking that he should be at least as good, if not at the very least a slight upgrade over Brian Winters. And for his price, let's face it. The reason we're shocked Brian Winters is still here is because the money he makes, the fact there's no cap hit, and he just hasn't been very good. So we'll see what happens if he ends up going. But I'll start with right guard.
Let me ask you a quick question
before
we go to the next position group here, because I don't know if it was Cimini or Costello, the guys from the beat that had mentioned that Roten has experience as a center. Now, what is the likelihood that he gets a center job, McGovern plays guard, and then you have like a Cameron Clark, Winters, and Alex Lewis competition at that right guard spot? Could that potentially be the best lineup that we could go forward with?
Well, I mean,
I'm
you
not
know,
sure.
the,
I think McGovern's a center, but I'm just not sure if
well, McGovern,
if
you remember,
that, you know.
If you remember, Alex, a couple of years ago, McGovern played a handful of games at guard, and the reviews on that were that he's a better guard than a center. But I remember people mentioning that after the Jets signed him, but I just can't see them. You want the best center possible right now with Darnold under center. I think for that reason, and I think I said earlier this offseason that maybe McGovern moves to guard at some point, but I don't think they plug anyone else. I don't think they plug anyone else in at center until they feel comfortable that that guy can handle the position. You know, picking up the checks and things of that nature, but you're picking up blitzers that are trying to hit that A gap the way that the Jets have struggled to do so mightily the last couple of years. I think you want that sort of experienced veteran in that spot. So we'll see what happens there. If he moves to guard because they feel like they have a center. Because, you know, you remember I think we both said we'd like to see them bring in Biadasz prior to the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And even then I said, you know, let's let Biadasz start at guard until they feel like he's ready for center and then move him over and then flip him and McGovern. So I think McGovern ends up playing center. But if someone else emerges and they feel like they can move him to guard and have a reliable center playing alongside him, then absolutely, why not? But I think for the time being, it's going to be a battle between, or not even a battle. I just said it. I'm shocked that Brian Winters is still on the roster. I can't see him being on the roster when the season starts, not at that price tag. I think that means Van Roten or Clark will be starting at right guard. I think George Fant wins the right tackle job because I don't think they want to pay a blocking tight end $8 million a year. As you said, Lewis at left guard, we know what we're getting there. The thing with Lewis, it's funny. The O-line was so bad last year that Lewis was like your best O-lineman, and now he's probably the worst, which is kind of a good thing because
yeah,
of what they built around him.
He got hurt, too.
Oh, yeah, a ton.
He was good for at least
insane.
One game before he left.
Yeah,
he had a four or five game stretch.
Yeah, he had a 4 or 5 game stretch where not just a penalty, but he kept getting penalties. It would call back big games.
Big plays, exactly.
Yeah, it just kept happening. It was really frustrating.
Screen for, was it Bilal, that was like a 20 to 30 yard scamper, and he was like, where the hell has these plays been? Like, what chapter of the Gase playbook did he just dust off and pull this? And then it's like, we need to see more of that. Wait, what's going on here? Why are we going backwards? Oh, great. You know, so we shot ourselves in the foot again.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts, you know. And like I said, it was like he had a 4 or 5 or 6 game stretch where he kept taking away first downs and taking away big plays. So, but he was still probably the best all-around lineman. And this year the hope is that he may be the worst. If Mekhi Becton, you know, who should be starting a left tackle, if he steps up. So we'll see, obviously, upgrades across the board, generally with the exception of Lewis. Before we move on to the defense, Alex, let's talk a little bit of a defense. The Jets were mentioned earlier today in some rumors regarding Jadeveon Clowney. What were you seeing about that?
Yeah, very, really interesting. I know that a lot of people you know, hoping and praying that when the June 11th day, Tremaine Johnson day, was the day that the Jets were able to retain $11 million of his salary that he was due this year. So a lot of people were expecting them to, you know, on June 1st, flip that over and sign Clowney or maybe sign Logan Ryan or a Warford or, you know, Jason Peters at tackle. So, you know, a lot of people were just kind of hoping that the Jets were going to make, you know, one big splash when June 1st came around. So, to be honest with you, I'm not a huge, huge Clowney guy. I think I've mentioned that in the past. His injury history concerns me. I think the talent's there. That's no question. You look at all the check boxes. He hits a lot of things that you want from an edge defender and a defensive end. The money that he's trying to get is money that I feel that the Jets could have went after a Frank Clark or a Dee Ford last year or a Dante Fowler. You know, those guys have at least proven that they can be double-digit sack guys consistently, where we've only seen, nine and a half season. Sack season is his best, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So, and last year he was, like, under 5 sacks, I might have to go look that up right now.
He's never had double digits, and he only had 3 last year.
Yeah, so, I mean, there it goes, you know. It, you know, maybe people will get at the Madden ratings and going, oh, we need this guy. He's like a 92. Well, in reality, he's probably more like a 75.
And well, the thing is, he's a guy who could be elite. You know, it is kind of splitting hairs saying he's never had double-digit sacks because I believe he's had 9 twice. So, like, do those 2 sacks make him less of a player? But I think the thing is the injury history and such widespread talk about him being a guy who doesn't maybe necessarily love football a lot of time, hasn't been super productive. So for me personally, I would much rather spend that money on an O lineman, or you know, wait till teams make their cuts. Maybe a free agent receiver shakes loose, something along those lines. But before we move from offense to defense, looking at the improvements across the board, I want to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Jet Nation Radio. Would like to thank our sponsor, Miles Social. If you're running a business and you need help managing all of your social media platforms, check out milesocial.com. That's milesocial.com. If you want to upgrade the coverage on your Facebook, your Twitter, your Instagram, TikTok, whatever platform it may be, Miles Social will help you get more customers through your doors and more money in your pockets. That's milesocial.com, milesocial.com. Check them out to help you run your business. So moving to the defensive side, Alex, let's start up front again in the trenches. Obviously, the guy we're most excited to see, Jabari Zuniga. And to me, not a new player, but a guy entering year two. I think Quinnen Williams is going to be an absolute force this season. I said earlier about how much better Trevon Wesco played down the stretch. Same goes for Quinnen Williams. I've been harping on that for a while now. Go back and watch the second game against Miami. Go back and watch him play against Cincinnati. He looked like he was going to be the real deal. And I think an off-season of working out and an off-season of growing, I think he's a guy who was primed for a huge season up front. So on that D-line, I mean, look, the depth on that D-line is absolutely fantastic. You've got Williams, you've got McClendon, you've got Anderson, you've got Phillips. You've got, again, we're excited to see Zuniga. And just young guys, too, just really young players with the exception of McClendon, who have plenty in the tank and played at a high level last year.
You know, for me, I don't know if I can't be the only one that's thinking this here too, but I feel like this defensive line is going, the limits that they can go is going to be predicated on where Quinnen Williams is going to, you know, will he take that next step? And I don't know the laws, and I don't know the rules of conduct well enough to sit here and say that he's going to go unscathed with his incident that he had in the airport, several months ago. A lot of people are just kind of just feel like he's not going to have any sort of repercussions, and that might happen. Like I said, I am not educated enough on gun laws or on the player conduct rules on what happens when you get into situations that deal with federal laws. So, for me, I'm a little concerned about how many games he's going to be able to play. Is he going to be punished this year? Will he be punished next year? Is it going to kind of be one of those things where his court case gets pushed out months and months, you know, and he'll have a hearing sometime in the middle of the season, and then they'll schedule something in 2021. So maybe he goes this whole year unscathed, but maybe 2021 he has some some suspensions or something. I don't know. So that definitely interests me with Quinnen Williams' situation. But even if he's not in here, I am very comfortable looking at Steve McClendon as our defensive tackle leader and defensive line leader, followed with a blossoming Fuller-Runza Fatakasi and animal of a dog in the trenches as Nate Shepard. You know, those three guys I would be prepared to go to battle with right now in a 3-4 defense, and having Quinnen in there and then having Zuniga getting thrown in there. And then you talk about guys like Basham and Kyle Phillips in the rotation too. I really feel that another year of these guys growing and becoming more comfortable, because, you know, a lot of players say, like, you know, it was all wide eyed by rookie year or that first or second year. And, you know, everything was just like brand new. And then you come in and you're more comfortable and you're anticipating these things. You're recognizing things when you're out on the field. So you're playing faster. You're playing smarter. These are the things that I'm excited to possibly see from this defensive line. And, you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, it all starts up front. And if these guys match the level of play that they had back in November and December up front, you know, teams are going to struggle to run the ball against us. Teams are going to have to find ways to get rid of the ball quickly in the passing game so that they don't get swallowed up by our big guys up front. So I'm very excited to see, you know, the potential of our defensive line. And we've already seen a small sample size of what they can do and where they ranked against the run. And, you know, we didn't let up, you know, we didn't get blown out by huge margins with exception of that Baltimore game late in the year. And we kept ourselves in a lot of the games, you know, with a terrible 32nd ranked offense. Our defense kept us honest to win 6 out of the last 8 games that we had last year. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that we can take in from the end of last year and move forward with this year that could possibly be even better.
Yeah, I think that the big thing to me, Alex, what you were talking about, the Quinnen Williams thing, the reason why I'm not too worried about that, and listen, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we'll have to wait and see. But and it was weird. It was really surreal that Quinnen Williams story broke, because I want to say 24, 48 hours, somewhere within there, I had just watched a video online, a news story about it was like a mom and her 2 daughters, and then I think there was like 1 or 2 different people who had gone through a situation where, and this is a crack in the system. This is like, how does this exist? How do you allow this to happen? And good, decent, honest people end up getting in trouble with the law. So if you're Quinnen Williams and you have a gun registered in Alabama, like doing the right thing, if you're traveling, if you're flying from New York and you go to the TSA's website, they give you a set of instructions to tell you what to do when you arrive at the airport. Make sure the ammo and the gun are separate and they're bagged and they're in the case and you can access them, and you declare it on the paperwork and you tell a clerk when you check in, and all the paperwork will be completed. And Quinnen Williams did all of that. And then they say, New York City, guns are legal, you're under arrest. I'm like, well,
yeah.
How do you have a thing on the TSA website that controls luggage with traveling, and they give you the steps, they spell it out for you, how to properly, legally travel with a gun, and a guy properly, legally travels with his gun based on that info, and then they arrest him. So yeah. If his lawyer is, you know, fault, he's going to bring the TSA regulations to the league and say, my guy did what the government told him to do, and they arrested him. And it, like I said, the case I saw, I want to say the woman was Tennessee. It was a mom and her 2 young daughters, and they arrested this woman who was with her 2 kids. Mm-hmm. She's showing the 8. She's like, I'm doing what the website told me to do. What do you want? No, can't have a gun, can't have a gun. So I think this thing is going to go away. Quinnen Williams will be fine. He's going to be a beast. And everything else you said, again, the depth of, you know, Phillips, Basham, I don't think I even mentioned Fatakasi, who's an absolute monster in the middle. So plenty of hope up front on the D line. Then of course we go to linebacker, where I don't think we need to say a lot more about inside linebacker. We talked at the top about how that might be the biggest upgrade on the roster by going to Mosley and Williamson after a sort of carousel of mid lower level guys who played well. Let's be fair, James Burgess, Neville Hewitt, those guys played all right last year. So that, of course, pushes us to the outside linebackers. Jordan Jenkins on one side, and then who the hell knows on the other side. You know, we'll see some Basham. Yep. We're hoping that Huff finds a way to make the roster and contribute there on passing downs. But at the linebacker spot, Alex, not a ton of additions on the outside spots, but what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it's really intriguing because, you know, as we talked about probably last month, there's an abundance of inside linebackers, and I'm not really sure if some guys are going to be, you know, because Greg Williams likes to have his defensive players have at least 2, if not 3 roles within his scheme. So, you know, some of these inside guys might have outside duties too. That remains to be seen. You know, is Blake Cashman going to be in the rotation? We saw him play a little bit outside linebacker last year. You know, we know that his history with his shoulders are not great. So you can't really, you know, put him as a number one, number two potential guy in this, on the depth chart. But, yeah, the outside linebacker is probably the most intriguing out of the whole entire defense because we know who our safeties are. We know who our guys up front are. We know we have Desir on the outside. And then the biggest question marks defensively is, you know, outside of George Jenkins, who's going to be the next biggest threat coming off the edge? And, you know, who's obviously going to be our number two guy outside in the corner. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But, you know, yeah, it really, really seems interesting that they put more of an emphasis this year in the interior aspect of the linebackers from what, you know, we've seen. Rather than the outside. And this is a league where it's a passing league and everybody loves the edge defenders and seeing those guys, you know, go into a 3 or 4 point stance or a 2 point stance and cause havoc in the backfield. It's a lot of fun to watch players do that, but the Jets just don't really seem to have that type of player at the moment. So outside of Jordan Jenkins, yeah, who's the mystery man? That's going to be playing opposite of him. Maybe it's Basham. That probably would be my first guess because he's a little bit ahead of everybody in that room right now. He's ahead of Azuniga. He's, you know, maybe going to be splitting with Kyle Phillips a little bit depending on, you know, that week's scheme and how he fits what they're trying to do because there was a lot of, you know, like position group changes that Greg Williams was, you know, messing around with. He'd have, you know, Kafusi and Basham and Phillips coming in, and then you have, you know, Cashman and Burgess and the other guys coming out, and, you know, they're coming back in the next play. So he got really, really creative, and it's going to really, really be difficult at this point in time to say, like, this is Greg Williams' guy opposite Jordan Jenkins. So I'll definitely be intrigued to see how that plays out.
All right, and that brings us to the secondary, where, you know, we've already talked quite a bit about Pierre Desir. I'm going to, you know, he's going to start at one corner. I'm going to assume Bless Austin wins the other spot. And then, you know, of course, you got Brian Poole, who's going to be, you know, he's going to be your nickel guy. And then Ashton Davis, who's going to do a little bit of everything. But all in all, you know, again, Jamal and May at safety, and maybe, you know, maybe Davis fills in there from time to time, and that makes it a little easier for Jamal to come up front and replace an outside linebacker and get after the quarterback. Not something you want to do a million times with a guy Jamal's size, but something you can definitely do frequently enough to have an impact. But the secondary, to me, it's if Desir is healthy and Bless Austin plays as well as he did early last year, I mean, well, early in his season, he missed a lot of time, obviously, recovering from an injury. But on defense, those are the biggest factors, because without a true pass rusher, these are the guys the Jets, they're going to need them to hold up so the defense has time to get pressure on the quarterback. And they're going to need some of these guys to make plays on the ball. But I think Desir and a year too often is probably better than what they had last year. And, of course, you know, the nickel spot stays the same with a few bodies, you know, a few guys brought in for depth. And, you know, of course, Mollett's coming back. They re-signed him. Harrison's coming back, and he's a guy who played well at times last year. And then, of course, Quincy Wilson from the Colts. So a couple new names, a couple returning guys. But the biggest factor to me is the health of Desir. What are your thoughts there, Alex?
I'll tell you what I want to happen. I want this fifth-round pick, Bryce Hall, to come into this year healthy because he claims that, you know, his injury happened very early in the season in 2019. So he's had well over almost a year of recovery.
I keep hearing so much mixed stuff about his ankle, Alex. It's a little frustrating, isn't it? I would love to see him steal a starting job early.
Did you see his injury, that one play where he was blocking and the guy rolled up on his back ankle like that? I mean, it's just the one thing that you never want to see happen to anybody. And that's what kind of – normally you see that happen to, like, linemen. And
right,
and
right.
Looks horrible.
The guy gets knocked over and rolls up on him.
Right. And, you know, it's just one of those freak plays where he got blindsided, didn't see it coming. And I don't know if it was one of his own teammates or it was just kind of like collateral damage. Somebody's body got taken off the ground and all their weight went right onto that back foot of his. So it was a definitely a brutal injury. We'll see if he loses his speed, then you know that he's not going to pretty much be able to do anything, because speed is definitely very important at the cornerback position. So what I'm hoping for is that this kid, Bryce Hall, who was talked about as a late first, early second round grade until that ankle injury had occurred, becomes the guy, kind of like the way that we were expecting or hoping that Les Austin would be the guy, because we had no film on him. It was all hearsay and what people were writing about him and conversations from coaches of what they've seen. And, you know, in that small stint that Les Austin had played, we saw some really, really quality cornerback play, something that we haven't seen in years. So if Bryce Hall is the same kind of the draft selection was the same ideology of, you know, just give this guy a little bit of time to, you know, strengthen that leg up and get him back to form where he was in 2018, then the Jets have themselves another, you know, very, very talented defensive back and potentially looking at a strong point of the defense if this kid Hall hits his ceiling. So at the moment, I'm with you with Desir and Austin on the outside of being the potential one and two. I guess a sleeper would be Quincy Wilson, the trade that we made with Indianapolis. And, you know, Arthur Mollett, we clearly know that Greg Williams is comfortable deploying him. If you know, you get beat, like Les Austin got beat just before the end of the first half in that Week 16 game, and he didn't get to see the field again for the rest of 2019. And I know I've said that plenty of times. So we know how Greg Williams is. He has that no BS attitude. If you bust and you do something bad on the field, he will yank you right then and there and replace you. So that definitely concerns me as far as Les Austin and where he stands with Mr. Greg Williams. But year two, maybe he comes back healthier, a little bit more educated about what his role will be on the defense. And, yeah, you know, you could be looking at a pretty sharp tandem. But, again, you know, history shows that Austin has struggled with his health, just like a few other guys that we have in house. And we really don't know what's going on with this rookie Ashton Davis. You know, we've been told he's a phenomenal athlete and he can kind of play the dime cornerback. He can play nickel cornerback, you know, he can play safety as well. So yeah, the Jets have a lot of, you know, versatile, talented guys in that defensive backfield, and it should work out very, very well, schematically. Again, you know, health and all those other things are the factor. But, yeah, my hope is that this kid, Bryce Hall, you know, reaches his ceiling and potential and wins a job and plays like he did in 2018. And that just brings me a quick question here, because a lot of people texted me, and I saw a lot of people kind of a little taken off or taken back by the contract that he got. I mean, 4 years at under $4 million. I think it was around 3.6, maybe to 3.8 million. I mean, for me, less than $1 million a year for a rookie. And people are saying, oh, my God, why do you pay a fifth-round pick so much? Does that really seem like a lot? For me, it doesn't seem like a lot, but some people seem to think he got paid too much.
No, you know, Alex, I saw that. You know what I think that was? And I could be wrong, because you're dead right about that. I wonder if people – the only way I can reasonably understand why people were saying that, do you think they thought that was per year? Like, who complains about a guy getting 900 grand a year in the NFL? You know what I mean? Like, relative to the NFL salaries, he got peanuts. And I saw some of those comments, and I was like, these people must be thinking they gave him 4 years, $3.6 million a year. Because that would be weird. I'm just throwing that out there, because I can't think of a logical reason why you would be upset that a fourth, fifth-round pick got 900 grand a year, or whatever it turns out to be. So I don't know. Just like I said, that I saw that and I was like, "What is this person talking about?" And then I was like, "Maybe they're thinking it's 3.6 a year." Yeah, that was a little bit weird. But sticking with the secondary,
it's an average of $925,000 a year. I mean,
yeah.
And this guy
could be
a potential starter. Are you joking me?
Yeah. I think people thought that was per year.
Right.
But wrapping things up, our last topic of the night, Alex, Jamal Adams, Pro Football Focus, did a top however many players. And tell us where Jamal Adams finished, Alex, and what do you think of that?
Yeah, so PFF has him as the top 20, Mr. 20, out of their, what'd they do, the top 50, I think? I think it was a top 50.
I think so. So
he's in the top half according to PFF. I mean, obviously, we all have the number one in our hearts. You know, I guess a lot of people hold his turnover statistics against him, which I feel is foolish, but maybe I'm being a homer. You know, I'm happy for Jamal. Clearly, you know, another piece for him to use as leverage during contract negotiations, I'm sure. You know, we don't, this is what I don't understand, is that we haven't had a lot of players that have the kind of talent that Jamal Adams has. Let's be honest. I haven't seen a player that we've drafted defensively with that kind of skill set since like Darrell Revis. And I'm trying to think further than that. And, you know, maybe you have better memory than me, but, you know, it just shocks me that there's fans out there that would really, really like to see him go. And, you know, and now we're going back to this COVID situation here. And someone had mentioned this before. Why would you trade away your best player not knowing what the future holds? There's a possibility. We have to be honest. There may not be a 2020 season. So are you really willing to trade away your best player to get future draft picks? You know, because people are saying, oh, we can get a tackle, we can get a first, we can get a second-round pick, you know, we get, you know, the big five from Wendy's bag too, and all this stuff they throw out there. I don't get it. At the end of the day, he is one of the best players in the league. He's one of the best players on this team. I think his potential we haven't even seen him scratch the surface yet. I think he's capable of doing more. I think that defensive back sack record is in jeopardy this year. And I think that, you know, Jamal clearly being the emotional, somewhat dramatic player that we've seen him on and off the field, is keeping receipts on some of the things that people say. And I would anticipate him having even a better year this year than he's had the last few. So I'm happy for Jamal. I'm really excited to see what he has in store for us, and I'm definitely hoping that, you know, he ends up retiring as a Jet someday.
Yeah, I really think that he's a guy that you want to have on your team, and I talked last week, Alex. I know you're busy. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the show, but I went through the list of great players the Jets have drafted, and there aren't many of them. And a lot of them that got drafted weren't that great with the Jets, and then they left and played great. Or the Jets traded them and they played great. You know, you look at Santana Moss as a guy. You look at Revis. Of course, Revis wasn't the same guy once he was traded because of the knee. But that's a whole different story. But seeing some of the names of guys that they had, that they drafted, that got away, and it felt like, and I'm sure it wasn't, but as they say, when you want so badly to be wrong. It really felt like, because I went in thinking, man, I bet they've let go almost as many quality players as they've kept. And it kind of, as I went through the list, I'm like Terrence Mathis, Jonathan Goodwin, and you start going through and finding these guys and guys that they traded. You know, Keyshawn Johnson, Santana Moss, guys they lost to free agency that they didn't got good picks, like the few good picks they have, and they let them go, and they're great elsewhere. Randy Thomas, who's the big one who's escaping me at the moment? I can't even.
Ooh. You got me there.
Yeah, there was a whole list of names in my head, and I was going through all these guys, and I'm like, you know, free agent. I already mentioned Lavernius Coles, he left, and they just, so many guys that they've drafted that they didn't. Oh, James Farrier, of course, because he's the guy. Farrier's the guy that I've debated with a million people if he was a good pick or not. And I said this last week, I don't want to go too long on this because, A, we don't have a ton of time left, and, B, I went over it last week, Alex. But I think, at least for me, for my peace of mind, I don't expect other people to do this. But I've kind of created a new category in my mind of draft pick that's not boom or bust, but wasted pick. Because if people are going to get so up in arms that I say James Farrier was a bust of a pick, oh, but he was a great player. Like, to me, he wasn't a great Jet. Like, and this is the example I gave, and I'll keep it short so as to not run through it all over again. But if I'm the owner of a team and you have a crystal ball and you come to me and say, we're drafting this guy in the first round, and I say, great, you got that crystal ball. What can you tell me he's going to do for us? Well, he's not going to do much for us, but he's going to be great once he leaves. Like, that's not an acceptable answer. Our pick, draft picks, especially your first-round picks, those are the guys we got to hit on. And having a guy that is great somewhere else isn't a hit. So if you're going to say, oh, he's not a bust, he was awesome with the Steelers. Okay, well, it was a wasted pick in terms of the Jets. So Farrier for the Jets was a wasted pick. And there are others, guys who don't do well. And then you remember Terrence Mathis? That guy was like a jag for the Jets. He did nothing. And then he goes to the Falcons, and I think he was like one of the first guys ever to have like 100 and however many catches. He put up like astronomical numbers for that time. And the Jets fans are like, this guy was like our fourth, fifth, sixth receiver. He didn't do anything. He goes somewhere else, year one, boom, he's off the charts. So anyway, the bottom line, Alex, is that so many good players end up leaving this team. And Jamal Adams, who finished in the top 20 for PFF, and congratulations to him. It's weird. He's a great player who has become polarizing to some degree. Why? Well, you know, we see the leadership thing get pushed and pushed and pushed, and then we see him kind of melt down when he gets his name mentioned in a trade, and, you know, the team will get blown out, but he's tweeting out pictures of himself and how good he looked before the game, and he has trade value, and fans love draft picks, you know, probably a little too much. Like, oh man, we can move this guy and get a couple first round picks and maybe a player, and, you know, and he's a prima donna and the cryptic tweets and all the stuff. But the bottom line is, listen, he's a great player, and you want your favorite team to retain their great players. This team doesn't draft many of them, so I'd love to see him retained, and I'm happy to see that he got some more recognition and finished top 20 for PFF. And I think that's it. We touched briefly on Tremaine Johnson. He's gone. Frees up $8 million. Or $11 million, whatever it is. That money, basically 90% of it will go toward draft picks. It doesn't free up as much money as it looks like on paper. The Jets will essentially be
around
right back where they,
$25 million right now.
I believe so. Yeah, they were sitting at 14 or 15, and now they're at 24, 25. So once they sign all their rookies, they'll be back in the 14, 15 range. So not a ton of money out there, but enough to go grab a player. And who knows, again, Winters can be cut and save $6 million. Actually, I think it's $7.2 million. Avery Williamson, who I don't want to see cut, but he would save another $6 million. So there's room to free up money if they want to pursue somebody. If they stay as is, they've got the money for some mid-level guys. And we'll see how that goes. But that'll wrap it up for us tonight this evening. Alex, you got anything else for us?
No, it's been great. And I'm glad to see, you know, facilities are opening up and things are trending in a more positive direction as far as the football world's concerned. So, you know, maybe you and I will hopefully be getting sunburned during training camp this year. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll tell you what, man. I don't know when I'll be getting on the airplane again. Jesus, they don't clear up this COVID thing. It's weird, man. I know we don't talk about it a lot, you know, last couple minutes, whatever.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I do not blame you.
Yeah, my wife's high risk. I'm high risk. We got two little kids. You know, I'm not really in a position to bring the damn thing home, but, I don't know. Who knows, man? Hopefully we can make it out to camp. I mean, I'm sure you will. Hopefully I can get out there as well.
They allow it to be public.
But I was just about to say, who knows what the media act is going to be. They might not even let us this year. They might say, you know, mainstream media only, and they got to wear a bubble. We'll see what happens, man. But either way, glad we were able to get together this week. And looking forward to doing it again 1 week from tonight. So thanks so much, Jets fans, for tuning in. And we will catch you again next week. Have a good one.
Take care, Jets fans.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Jet Nation Radio. Glenn is at AceFan23 and Alex is at NYJetsLife24.
Until next time,
go Jets!
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.